There are 10,000 baby boomers retiring every day. And so since 2010, Social Security has been paying out more than it's actually been taking in.
You are listening to C-Suite Perspectives, a podcast by the Conference Board.
Welcome to this episode. I'm Steve Odlin from the Conference Board and the host of this series. And in today's conversation, we're going to discuss the current state of Social Security in the United States. Joining me today is Dr. Lori Esposito-Murray, President of the Committee for Economic Development of the Conference Board. Lori, welcome.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be here.
So, Lori, before we start, can you just, for our listeners, tell everybody what Social Security is, how, when it was created, and why it was created? Little history.
Okay, so Social Security was created in 1935, and it's a foundational pillar of Americans' retirement. And what's interesting today is it really does separate us from a large society such as China, for example, that doesn't have this type of program for its retirees. So in 2023, we had 66 million individuals receiving benefits. Okay, so what does that mean? As mostly everyone listening to this podcast knows, they pay into Social Security. They pay 6.2% of wages, get taxed. It's paid by the employers and the employee. They each pay that, and it goes into the Social Security Trust Fund. So we had 180 million workers paying into Social Security to support 66 million individuals receiving the benefits in 2023. And the problem is that even though those numbers seem like it should work, in fact, since 2010, Social Security hasn't been receiving enough money in terms of what it's paying out. So Social Security benefits are the largest single source of income among Americans age 65 and older. But what's interesting, it was never meant to actually cover your full payroll. It was pre-retirement. And the problem is that now 50% of 55 to 66-year-olds don't have any retirement savings. And so they're very dependent on Social Security. And for one in seven Americans who are receiving Social Security, it provides at least 90% of their income. And if it was to go away, I was just going to give you this last figure, four times as many older Americans, 22.4 million, would fall below the poverty line.
But when it was created back in 1935, the life expectancy was what? So it was 65 at that point. So this was meant to be a supplemental program for retirement beyond the life expectancy. And along the way, 65 became the retirement age. And in fact, you can start collecting Social Security at reduced benefits at the age 62. You can collect it at 65, or you could collect it older, and it varies the payment. But the statistics that you quoted suggest that people are relying on Social Security as, you know, their sole means of support, when in fact that was never the intention.
It was never the intention. And part of what happened was that components of this were supposed to be part of a larger package. So you had pension funds. Well, we don't have pension funds anymore. And then you had retirement savings. Well, retirement savings have been hit pretty hard between cost of living, schools, you know, the cost of education, just what's happened to cost in achieving goals while you are actually employed. So those pillars or those other parts of the package have fallen off. And so you're in a position, we're in a position as a nation where one in seven Americans, it's 90% of their income. And as I was saying, that really critical figure that if it was to go away, we'd have 22.4 million would fall below the poverty line.
So going back on what you said, people don't have pensions anymore. I think it's in rare cases that people have pensions, but there are government pensions for government workers, and some corporations have defined benefit pensions still, but most have gone to defined contribution pensions, which are 401ks, IRAs, and so forth, for which this is intended to be a supplement as well. But it was never intended to be a full pension, and And it was always intended that there would be kind of supplemental, but people are not using it that way. And hence it's, you know, it's a greater burden, I think, on society, given, you know, the state of people's finances, right?
Well, it's a greater responsibility. The burden is basically the same. So, you know, that begs the question, why is Social Security in trouble? You know, why is the trust fund being depleted? And really, it has to do with demographics, Steve. You know, we have, since 2010, we have started this wave of the baby boomers retiring. And of course, that accelerated during COVID. So you have more people retiring because of the baby boomers. And then, of course, our birth rate is extremely low. And, you know, just to compare from today, there are just 2.7 workers paying into Social Security for each person who's drawing benefits. That's fallen dramatically from 5.1 to 3.4 in 1960. And in 2000, respectively. So you've had this major drop in birth rate, and you have an aging society where the burst we had in terms of birth rates with the baby boomer generation all retiring. There are 10,000 baby boomers retiring every day. And so since 2010, Social Security has been paying out more than it's actually been taking in.
Yeah. And it, at the start of this, you had more than 10 people paying in versus receiving. So it was, you know, quite substantial, and it wasn't that onerous. You know, you were collecting from a lot of people to supplement a few, but as you say, now we're down to 3.4 in 2000, but it's rapidly approaching 2 to 1. So it's essentially the math doesn't work given the demographic shift, and hence the trust fund is projected to run out of money here soon.
Right. And it had been prior to 2010, it had been running surpluses. And of those surpluses, there's currently $3 trillion left in IOUs in the trust fund. And that's expected to run out by 2033. And that's IOUs for cashing in treasury bonds. And that's expected to run out in 2033. The other last minute type of solution is using federal dollars to fill that gap from the federal budget. And we're looking at we're already in a very serious debt and deficit situation, as you know, $34 trillion in debt, $1.7 trillion in deficits this year alone. This is only projected to get worse. We're at 100% of debt to GDP now, expected to explode over the next couple of years. And one of the biggest drivers of deficits and debt, or the biggest driver of deficits and debt, is Social Security, with Medicare just right behind it.
So essentially, the math doesn't work, and the demographics have shifted such that, you know, you now have a bigger burden than you're taking in, and the trust fund is going to be depleted. All right. So, you know, these demographics will work their way out, but this is what the demographics are talking about is a baby boom generation, thousands retiring every day. And I think the youngest of the baby boom is what, now 60 years old or close to 60, 59, 60. So, you know, you're going to essentially get worse before you get better. So you've got almost a 20-year period of time as you work through this huge surge in population, in retiree population. So it's really going to be, you know, a very difficult financial situation for the government.
So in 2022, Social Security spent $147 billion more than it brought in. And that gap is expected to widen to $670 billion by 2033, when the trust funds go insolvent. What's interesting, though, Steve, is that, as you were pointing out, there was this first huge wave of retirees that's impacting Social Security solvency. But there's also a second wave coming, 2055 to 2078. And so we not only have to deal with the problem that is happening now, and the sooner we deal with it, the less it will cost to mitigate the problem. But then we're hitting a second wave in 2055 to 2078, according to the actuaries, as far as again being in this retirement crunch. So it's the timing is extremely important that we actually focus on this now and work on this now.
Yeah, and you know, part of the issue is that the healthcare is getting better. The U.S. medicine is advanced, and life expectancy is now up close to 80 years old rather than 65 years old. So that's putting a bigger burden on. So as we continue to make advances, you would expect people to live longer. So it just seems that the problem is before us, and action should be taken. Why don't our elected officials address this?
I think the simple answer is the politics of it, the fear of the impact of the politics of it, the fear to be leaders. You know, in our society, it's very important if there is a major challenge that needs to be undertaken, it's extremely important that we have policy leaders who are willing to address that, explain that, and help the American public understand why it needs to be addressed. And that really seems to be absent. Part of the reason why is we have an aging population, and it's the aging population that votes. Young people don't vote. The demographics are skewing older. They vote. They don't want their benefits touched. And so this is one of the few issues, and it was the only issue that President Biden in the State of the Union, when he said, okay, let's all agree we're not going to touch Social Security and we're not going to touch Medicare, he got a standing ovation, a bipartisan standing ovation. It was the only time during his entire speech that he received that kind of support, bipartisan support. So bipartisan reluctance to actually take this on. Members of Congress think in terms of the next 2 years when they're up for re-election. Members of the Senate every 6 years. It's a problem down the road, not that far down the road, but the attitude is, I want to come back to office, let someone else handle it when it becomes a crisis, which is the last time Social Security was reformed was in 1983. That was the Greenspan Commission, as you remember. That happened 3 months before the trust fund was about to go insolvent at that time. It was a little bit easier challenge, so it could have been addressed in a shorter period of time, but this is a much bigger challenge, and we really need the lead time to find the answers.
But, as a baby boomer, we've heard our entire adult life that Social Security was not going to remain solvent, that in fact, it wouldn't be there for us when we retired, but we were going to have to pay in to take care of the generation before us, the generation that's called the greatest generation, World War II generation, and that we would have to start saving, and hence the creation of all of these defined contribution plans of 401ks, IRAs, and so forth. So, I guess what you're saying is accurate in terms of the view today. But it's not that people haven't been preparing us for this all along. And I really wonder. Nobody wants benefits cut, but I really wonder if that isn't just sort of a red herring.
It is in terms of responsibility, and we have a responsibility to the current recipients of Social Security to make sure that they continue to receive their Social Security. But we have a moral obligation to the current workforce that is into Social Security to make sure this program is viable. And that's a moral and a policy obligation that our political leadership needs to recognize and needs to own. What's interesting, one of the drivers of the efforts today in Congress and the awareness in Congress. I mean, Congress is very aware of the fact that the Social Security Trust Fund is about to go insolvent, and it keeps getting closer and closer every year. It went from 2035 to 2034. Now they're talking. Now CBO is estimating 2033. And one of the most interesting aspects of this, in terms of raising the awareness for action, is the fact that inflation has resulted in a higher cost of servicing our outsized debt. So the cost of servicing our $34 trillion debt is now the third largest cost in the budget. You have Social Security, you have Medicare, and that and the healthcare programs. And then you now have the cost of servicing the debt, which was about $1 trillion this year. That's a tremendous amount of money that's being used to pay the debt that's not being used for national priorities or to, most importantly, help us address this outsized debt. So the debt servicing has raised the awareness in Congress of the challenge of what will happen if we don't take care of the insolvency problem with Social Security. If you have to turn to the general federal budget to keep those benefits going, that's going to be a huge cost and a burden that we really can't afford. And so what's the other alternative? If you don't take action on Social Security, you're going to see 25% benefit cuts to seniors. So that's a huge cost for policy leaders, for politicians in 2033. And that's pretty soon around the corner. The longer it takes us to deal with this problem, the more expensive it gets to solve it. And that's one of the drivers for why we need to look at it now. And believe it or not, this inflation and the price of debt, the cost of debt servicing is actually providing an opportunity to deal with this major challenge.
We're talking about Social Security and the effect on the U.S. budget. We're going to take a short break and be right back.
What does the future of work mean for your employees? How will your company navigate ESG? Will there be a global recession? At the Conference Board, our experts translate the latest research and economic analysis into insights and real-time problem solving for your organization. Membership at the Conference Board provides your team with an assortment of knowledge from economics, marketing and communications, ESG, public policy, and human capital. As a member, you'll have access to our center experts, member-exclusive events, data and benchmarking tools, and peer sharing that will help you understand the present and shape the future. Consider becoming a Conference Board member today by visiting www.conference-board.org.
I'm your host, Steve Odlin from the Conference Board, and I'm joined by Dr. Lori Esposito-Murray, President of the Committee for Economic Development of the Conference Board. Okay, so Lori, back to policy. What should we do about this Social Security shortfall?
So there is no single silver bullet that's going to solve the problem that's actually feasible. I mean, you could say we'll just raise the payroll tax. But if you do that, the amount you have to raise it will really hurt both employers and employees. So you can't just do one thing. It's going to be a combination of solutions. And it's only with a combination of solutions do you ease the burden of any one solution. Overall, I would say first you have to start with the guiding principles for reform. You have to look at both revenue and benefits so that you ensure that no single group of beneficiaries or taxpayers have to bear the total burden. And the reforms really need to be looking at Social Security's trajectory over the next 10 years when the trust funds will go insolvent, but also look at the balance of the reforms for revenues and costs over a full 75-year projection window, which is how the program is actually planned by actuaries. So given that, you also want to protect the most vulnerable seniors. So what do? We have a number of recommendations that we believe should be considered as part of this package. And one is, what you've been pointing out, is raise the full retirement age to 69. And, you know, as you said, when Social Security was started in 1935, you were eligible for benefits at 65, but life expectancy was 62. And today that is flipped. Today you're eligible for benefits way before life expectancy. So looking at the retirement age when you receive Social Security benefits has to be a key component of this. You could also implement modest additional means testing for high-income beneficiaries, use more accurate calculations of annual cost of living adjustments. That's also very expensive, the way we approach cost of living adjustments with Social Security. And what's really critical is to remove the disincentives to work for retirees. We have a labor shortage. This solves a number of problems. Remove those disincentives, raise the age, get people back to work, and you kill two birds with one stone in terms of the challenges in this economy. You increase the labor pool, and you also help to solve the Social Security problem. So there are a number of things you can do, and while you're doing this, increase the minimum benefit for the most vulnerable beneficiaries in terms of Social Security. And then there are a couple of creative solutions out there from members of Congress. And one of them is to really diversify the trust fund investments beyond Treasury securities. And so there are a number of things that should be looked at. They need to be looked at in a package. And there are some interesting and new ideas in terms of how to address the problem.
So basically, you're bending the cost curve by, you know, having people retire later, in other words, get benefits later, a few years later, which doesn't seem to be, you know, really out of line with, you know, the fact that, you know, people's life expectancies are also increasing. Also, you know, you talked a little bit about the means testing, and so that the most vulnerable got, you know, are protected. So that's that. And then the revenue side as well, to bring in a little bit more on the payroll tax side. So that sounds pretty simple. Does the math work then?
What's interesting, Steve, is we're dealing with two major programs that are the largest drivers of the debt, Social Security and Medicare. Social Security is actually the easier one to solve. And it really comes down to political will and putting together a package that makes sense, that no one single group is getting hurt, that you have enough timeline in terms of implementing these changes so that people can prepare on the younger end of the workforce in terms of retiring and what they would need to do. It really comes down to, some people call it political will, I call it political responsibility.
Okay, so any other issues that should be considered when they're dealing with these reforms?
Well, the other piece of this on the revenue side is, you know, along with raising the minimum earned income subject to the payroll tax to 90%, which has been a longstanding CD proposal, is today at 81%, but also covering newly hired state and local workers. I mean, bring more people in to the Social Security pool, which is really important. But a final piece of this is, how do you do it? And that's where one of our longstanding recommendations has been to set up a bipartisan fiscal responsibility commission that looks at the entire federal budget. So you're not just getting your savings from the discretionary part of the budget, which are the 12 appropriations bills that Congress does. That's about 25 to 30% of the budget, that you're actually looking at Social Security and Medicare, the healthcare programs, you know, the mandatory side. Do it with the fiscal commission, do it bipartisan, do it with members of Congress, have real timelines. And CED's proposals actually pretty much track almost exactly with the bipartisan bill that just came out of the budget committee for a fiscal responsibility commission. So you put together the tactics, the operations that you need, this commission. And then, as I said, when you actually start working on the Social Security piece of it, the numbers are actually easier to get to in terms of solving it than any of the other challenges.
Right. And the commission is to deal with the entirety of the debt and deficit issues to try to bend that curve down. But the Social Security piece doesn't, I mean, yeah, you could do it under a commission, but as you said, it's very simple. I think my own opinion is that, you know, people have been prepared for this for a long time. I don't think that requires a commission to just address Social Security. What worries me a little bit is if we just say, okay, we can't touch this until we have a commission that does the whole thing. I mean, we'll never get going on it. And it just seems like, since it is the simpler of the issues, that we ought to get a jump start on it. But as you said, the problem with that is political will.
Right. And so that's why a commission might actually, you know, serve a larger purpose, which is, or you could actually put this in the context of how you're addressing the budget. And the fiscal commission actually has timelines that what it decides should be implemented within the next year or so. So you're not talking about a commission that's going to come up with something 10 years from now. There are real tight timelines on addressing the major challenges. And they have Social Security, the two trust funds going insolvent, Medicare and Social Security, as part of the commission's responsibility.
But we've had two budget commissions in the past, Simpson-Bowles and Domenici-Rivlin, which were, I thought, very well done, very serious people, you know, dealing with the recommendations. And had they implemented it when those commissions came out with the recommendations, we wouldn't have the issues today. They wouldn't be as serious, but they didn't do it. Why did that not take place, you know, on the last two commissions, and why would another commission be any different?
You know, in fact, a number of the proposals did make their way through individually, even though they couldn't get the full package approved of Simpson-Bowles. But I really do think what the game changer is now, Steve, is the debt servicing number. The debt servicing number is making first of all, it has stopped any discussion of modern monetary theory that you don't have to worry about the size of your deficits. And that's due to inflation, and it's hitting really hard in terms of how much it's costing to service the debt, how much of the budget is being consumed by servicing the debt. That has made everyone in Congress completely aware of the significance of having to take on this outside national debt problem that we have. Largest driver, Social Security, Medicare, has to be part of the solution. The largest driver is Social Security, and the solutions exist. They're not, it's not as complicated as the Medicare problem and the healthcare problem. And so it's just really a matter of, I think, getting to work and moving the American public to a point of awareness that you are talking about major benefit cuts in 2033. That is not that far away. That's going to affect a significant number of current seniors. As you said, our life expectancy is much higher, as well as the new retirees that are coming in, you know, 10,000 a day in this window, this wave of big retirees that will go on until 2040 and then pick up again after 2055.
All right, Dr. Lori Esposito-Murray, thanks as always for sharing with us your thoughts on Social Security.
Thank you, Steve. Important issue and important that you're raising it.
You have been listening to C-Suite Perspectives, a podcast by the Conference Board.